This is music from Ben Allison. Welcome to The Checkout. I'm Josh Jackson. The bassist gives us The Stars Look Very Different Today, an album inspired by science, science fiction, David Bowie, and everything in between.
I'm traveling light.
NPR's Patrick Jaranwatanan and I run down a few of our favorite recordings of 2013. And first, we remember A Gentle Giant, tribute to a multi-instrumentalist, the trailblazer, and a great blues player, Yusef Lateef. That's coming up next. This is The Checkout. Thanks for checking in. On December 23rd, 2013, we lost another great one, Yusef Lateef. He was 93. He was born William Emanuel Huddleston, but Yusef Abdul Lateef changed his name in the 1950s when he converted to Islam. That name, Yusef Lateef, roughly means gentle Joseph. And despite that soft-spoken spirit he had, Lateef was kind of a rebel. He played unconventional instruments, rejected the label of jazz, and refused to work in nightclubs. I interviewed Yusef Lateef in 2010, the year he became a National Endowment for the Arts Jazzmaster.
Dr. Yusef Lateef, thank you for joining us. Do you sort of bristle at the association of that word, jazz? I know that you have your own term, autophysiopsychic music.
Well, I don't bristle. I just don't understand. The term is ambiguous. When something is ambiguous, it doesn't communicate facts.
So tell me, if you would, explain to me, what is autophysiopsychic music?
Auto means self, physio means the physical, psychic means the mind and the heart. So it's autophysiopsychic music is music from the physical, the mental, and spiritual self.
Dr. Lateef, I'd like to ask you, when did you first start to sort of face East in terms of your musical outlook? I mean, before there was world music, you were doing it.
Yeah, that started about 1956, after I made my first recording for Savoy Records. I realized if I intended to continue recording that I'd have to change the canvas or what I put on the canvas. So to do that, I started studying music of various cultures in the library, and I studied with the Indian flute player and percussionist, etc. And that's when the search began.
And since then, you've mastered instruments, the oboe, the bamboo flute, the shanai, the shofar, the argol, the sarewa.
That's true.
My goodness. Have you run out of things to play?
No, there's much still out there. I have a African overtone flute now. I found it in Johannesburg a few years ago. So there's a multiplicity of ways to express sound, particularly you find them when you look into the music of various cultures. For example, I was a senior research fellow at Amadou Bello University. That's in northern Nigeria. I interacted with various ethnic groups there at the college, like the Fulani, Mugazawa. Each ethnic group, they had their own language, their own rhythms, the instrument makers had their own concept of constructing vibraphones. Like in the Western world, you find the lowest pitch on the far left. But in a Nigerian xylophone, the lowest note might be right in the center of the instrument, which is a different concept than you find in the Western world. The psychological effects of music, I found, were different in the Nigerian culture. To express sadness in the Western world, one would play, all right, a dirge, it would be in a minor key. But in Nigeria, to express sadness, a chordal harmony is appropriate. It's music voiced in fourths and so on.
What type of psychological effect do you hope that that your music has on the listener?
I hope that it has a positive effect, a warming of the heart. That's what I strive for.
Yusef Lateef, when you were a child in Detroit, Michigan, did you ever expect that the journey would take you here?
No, I found out a long ago that I couldn't predict the future in terms of contributing to culture. I just knew that I was on a journey.
And where do you hope that journey will lead you in the future?
Well, I pray that I leave some positive things here, literature and music, for mankind. So one can say, well, he contributed such and such for the mind that's in search of that which is unknown, at least prior to me trying to find out what my voice is. I've been trying to create my own musical voice, and I hope that it reaches the hearts and minds of those who listen.
Dr. Yusef Lateef is our guest on the checkout. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Detroit. I mean, you were there at a time where the music environment was extremely fertile in terms of, the people who were playing at the time, Tommy Flanagan and Barry Harris and Paul Chambers, the Jones Brothers.
Doug Watkins, Roy Brooks. Yeah, I feel very fortunate in spite of the people I grew up with. There were itinerant people, phenomenal musicians, visiting the city frequently. In fact, every week there would be a big band like Jimmy Lunsford, Count Basie, Earl Hines, Tiny Bradshaw, etc., would be playing at a place called the Greystone Ballroom. Of course, I didn't go there to dance. I went to listen to the band. And besides that, there was the Paradise Theater. There was a band there for a whole week, each week, like Billy Eckstein, Andy Kirk, Earl Hines, etc. And I got a chance to hear people like tenor players like Chu Berry with Cab Calloway.
Wow.
Count Hastings, tenor player with Tiny Bradshaw. There was Jimmy Lunsford. There was Big Joe Thomas, tenor player. And so we were bombarded constantly with all these artistic messages. And I feel very fortunate to have come up in that environment. Movement in Islam in 1948 in Chicago. That was a phenomenal thing. I was very grateful to be introduced to love for all, hatred for none, concept of Islam.
What kind of impact did it have on your music?
It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what Providence creates within the individual or within anything of sublimity. Providence is the creator of beauty. And so if there is some beauty or something that touches the heart, it's because of Providence, not because of me.
Yusef Lateef, when you look at this world, where do you see Providence?
I see it everywhere. I see it in the vegetable kingdom, the birds that fly, in each human being. I can see Providence. When someone speaks to another person kindly, I can hear it.
Is that what you hope to achieve every time you pick up an instrument?
I try to do it every time, yes.
What happens when you fail?
Well, nothing happens. The absence of providence is, I dread that. I seek guidance in all my undertakings. I don't give up if it doesn't happen. I just try, continue to pray and try to express the deeper meanings of existence, of being a human being, of respecting mankind and nature.
Yusef Lateef died at his home in Shutesbury, Massachusetts, December 23rd, 2013. He was 93. Coming up next, bassist, hardcore science fan, Ben Allison. This is The Checkout. I'm Josh Jackson. Ben Allison, thank you for revisiting The Checkout.
Man, always fun to be here.
The stars look very different today. Is there anything else behind that title other than the David Bowie reference?
Well, it's the birth of the space race. That tune is the space race. The way I interpret the lyrics are kind of a cautionary tale. You know, the astronauts lost out there and never coming home. But I prefer to think about it like the thrill of what that means to go out in space and the idea of seeing everything we know, which is Earth, from outside. I love reading about the ways in which scientists try to figure it out, how the universe works.
What have you been reading recently, scientific?
I've been reading a lot of articles about artificial intelligence.
What are your thoughts on Ray Kurzweil?
Yeah, well, he's great. I mean, he's the singularity, right? So this idea that with machines becoming more and more sophisticated, is it possible to model kind of a neural network and thereby make an artificial brain that is conscious? Can a machine become conscious? That's actually what the tune Dave is about on my record, the lead-off tune. A little tongue-in-cheek, the title, it stands for Digital Awareness Vector Emulator.
Digital Awareness Vector Emulator.
Yeah.
What is the personality of Dave?
There's a certain amount of repetitiveness, of control, but then variation. Following the analog of artificial intelligence, I would say that there is a certain kind of growing frustration. There's a lot of kind of electronic sounds, so I'm imagining all the beeps and whistles and crunches and buzzes of an electrical path, and so I wanted that to come through in the music.
This is Dave. Thank you. Ben Allison from the recording The Stars Look Very Different Today. Ben Allison on bass, Allison Miller on drums, Steve Cardenas guitar, and also Brandon Seabrook on the strings. What's the best way for a string instrument to sort of elucidate science fiction, you know, just that kind of concept? What does science fiction sound like to you?
Well, there's science and then there's science fiction. So science is what we're trying to figure out, and science fiction is this kind of a imaginary, hopeful vision of what we might be able to figure out later.
Yeah.
There's the science of the string. One thing that's cool if you're works great with basses or long strings. My daughter got a kick out of this. If you put up any kind of stringed instrument, but especially long strings like on a bass up in front of a television, let's say, and pluck the string, especially the A string or the E string, a television blinks typically, an old-fashioned CRT typically blinks around 60 cycles per second, and an E string is about 49 cycles per second. So you can actually see the wave of the string if you're looking through the string to the television set with the light of the TV behind the string, and you can see that wave. That's really cool. You know, so kids love that sort of stuff. I do, you know, and I I have to admit to sitting there and doing that for probably too long on a given morning.
Your daughter or just by yourself?
Well, I discovered it by accident, then stopped to think what was happening, and then showed my daughter.
Ben Allison, talk to me about Neutron Star.
Get off on a science tangent again.
Please do.
Well, I mean, neutron stars are cool. They're collapsed stars. If you can imagine the mass of somewhere between 1.5 to 3 of our suns condensed down into the size of Brooklyn. So 1 teaspoon of that would, it's millions and millions of tons. It's a churning ball of energy, unimaginably heavy. So I like that. That's cool to think about. Sometimes they spin really fast. They're called pulsars. And as I was writing this tune, that's one of the tunes I wrote the night before we recorded. I brought it in the next day. I tried to make something that had kind of a build to it, so kind of a pulsing energy that just kind of keeps going. So there's a certain longevity to this tune. It, for lack of a better word, kind of loops and builds over time. And it seemed to fit.
Thank you. Ben Allison joins us on The Checkout. How many songs did you write the night before you recorded?
Well, that one, there were a couple of others that I changed around quite a bit. Then we did a whole series of improvisations, just press record.
What was the purpose of that?
Well, I always do that on every recording session.
Why? You think you're going to get something that you can actually put out?
Well, I usually do. I've had an improvisation on almost every record I've done. I mean, by improvisation, I mean complete improvisation, like free, as they say, just no preconceptions about what it might be. You know, because so many of my favorite things happen by accident. So much of my favorite music seems to be unplanned.
It's funny to hear someone who loves science so much say that one of the things that you like is sort of accidental. I guess there are accidentals in science as well.
Well, there are many accidental discoveries.
Right.
Quote-unquote discoveries, things that nobody had any intention of making, like Teflon. But, I mean, with improvisation, it's also just fun to do. It feels good as a musician to have a very free-form conversation where there are no parameters, nothing outlined in advance, and you just let it flow. You never know what you're going to get.
And on this recording, Improvisus is the...
Yeah, catchy title.
Improvised.
Yeah, well,
how'd you figure that one out, man?
Yeah. I mean, we recorded at like 45 minutes or so. It was the last thing we did. And it's basically almost entirely Brandon, what you hear on the record. There are no overdubs. It's just him kind of layering up. He's got all these, it's like an old Walkman, one of the Walkman tape recorders.
Sure.
And it's got a little speaker in it. He had recorded what we were doing, you know, 10 minutes ago, and then plays it back into his guitar pickup with all of these other things that he's got, that he can kind of loop things around and modulate the sounds and all sorts of things. So it's mostly Brandon doing his thing, and I play a little bass line, and then Allison kind of sneaks in at the end, and then at the very end, Steve Cardenas, who kind of laid out for a minute, he was detuning his guitar completely and just played this totally out-of-tune chord, and everybody kind of stopped. And what you don't hear on the record is me cracking up, but that's basically what happened, and it just seemed like the all-time best way to end a record date. And that was it. That's how we finished.
Improvise us. Ben Allison, the stars look very different today. That's Swiss Cheese D. Music by bassist Ben Allison from his album The Stars Look Very Different Today. Joining him, Steve Cardenas on guitar, Brandon Seabrook on guitars and banjo, and Allison Miller on drums. Coming up next, NPR's Patrick Jaranwatanan and I reveal some of our favorite recordings of 2013. This is The Checkout. I'm Josh Jackson. Mercy Wind, music from pianist John Coward. That was one of my choices for the best recordings of 2013. I'm joined today by Patrick Jaranwatanan, who is the chief instigator and editor of NPR's A Blog Supreme. Patrick, John Coward's recording, it's like it just sort of snuck in, you know, without a lot of people seeing it, honestly. It's a recording on Artist Share.
But, right, that means he must have raised the funds for it and sort of self-produced it. I saw that Blue Note Records gave their co-signature, I guess, to it later on in the process.
It's amazing to me that John Coward, this is finally his recorded debut as a leader. When we consider sort of the totality of his work, he has worked largely behind the scenes as an arranger and a producer. He's worked with people like the singer Liz Wright and Joni Mitchell. Here he is, finally kind of making his own statement. And to some degree, that statement sounds very much like what you hear when you hear Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band.
They both have this thing where religious music and secular music, there's no real firm line between the two. So it all turns out kind of spiritual, and or at least spiritually motivated. And at least that comes through.
We're talking about the best of 2013, sort of the landmarks of this year, the year in review. Patrick Jaran-Watananan from NPR's A Blog Supreme joins us. Patrick, how about one of your choices?
Sure. Here's a track from Barry Altschul, the drummer. Folks who have been around a long time may recognize that name, Barry Altschul. You may have heard his name as part of a recording by the Sam Rivers Trio. In the 70s, he was a member of this great saxophone-based drums group. They were sort of this go-anywhere, flexible band. That band reunited a few years ago, and here he comes back this year with a record of his own compositions. This is a great recording in a similar vein. You know, it's a sax-based drums trio. This is the title track.
That's Barry Altschul from The Threedom Factor, title selection from that recording. Patrick Jaran-Watananan joins us on The Checkout. We're talking about the best recordings of 2013. You know, the best recordings based upon what we think, and we're just two guys in the jazz universe, Patrick.
Right, and there's plenty of other people out there, but that recording seemed to have been picked up by a number of people. Perhaps maybe because it includes John Arabagin, the saxophonist, who, a young, much younger player who's making a lot of good noise these days. He's playing in Dave Douglas's band as well. And Joe Fonda, the bassist, who's also been around a long time. Very good fit for what Barry Altschul was trying to do there.
And now for something completely different, as they say. Here's Etienne Charles. This is something that I selected. It's from his recording, came out in July, I believe, of 2013. Creole Soul. Let's hear the folks. Music from Etienne Charles, The Folks, from Creole Soul. What's interesting about this recording is, Etienne Charles, who is, you know, from that area, Trinidad, Tobago, you know, he's been incorporating some of these rhythms, you know, Minto, etc., from the islands, into what he does. But I felt, for some reason, that this was the most fully realized of all of those efforts. It seemed to me that he had been working, you know, in increasing gradation toward what ultimately Creole Soul became.
As well as being a trumpeter, he's also a percussionist, and you can see how he thinks in sort of percussive terms here as well.
You're listening to the best recordings of 2013, as chosen by Josh Jackson, me, and Patrick Jaran-Watananan from NPR Music on The Checkout.
I want to introduce another sort of Latin Caribbean mashup. Here's music by Vanessa Santi. She's a Philadelphia-based singer. What she did this year was create a recording that takes Billie Holiday tunes but plays them in an Afro-Cuban style. The recording is called Big Stuff Afro-Cuban Holiday.
He said goodbye and took my heart away. So from today, I'm traveling light.
That's Traveling Light, as you may have recognized the song, played as a sort of wah-wah-ko. Vanessa Santi, the singer, she was actually inspired to take on this project by another great modern Latin jazz superstar, really, Danilo Perez. You know, a lot of times you see these sort of tribute projects to some of the greats, and, you know, they kind of come out a little bit lackluster sometimes. But I think she really put an original look into it and revisited the sort of roots of these Afro-Cuban rhythms, in large part thanks to the percussionist and arranger on this project, Francois Zayas.
Sounds really good. Vanessa Santi. The best of 2013 here on The Checkout. Patrick Jaran-Watananan from NPR Music joins us. Let's go to some music from Chris Potter. I thought this project was going to be slightly ambitious, to say the least, to take music that was inspired by Homer's The Odyssey and somehow make a go of it. And
even for Chris Potter.
Even for Chris Potter, in fact, yes, indeed. But here we go, Chris Potter from ECM. The recording is called Sirens. Let's hear his take on The Sirens.
Thank you.
The Sirens, Chris Potter. On this recording, Chris Potter plays the soprano saxophone. He plays the tenor saxophone. And on The Sirens, we hear him play the bass clarinet. There seems to be kind of an unlimited potential to what this guy can do with a woodwind instrument.
Right. I mean, you know, if you know Chris Potter's music, you know him as like one of the great, you know, modern virtuosos. And sometimes, you know, some people are like, what is this stuff that he really seems to thrive on? And I think we found one of those things in this recording. And maybe it's just because it's more or less just a quartet recording that really just capture him writing tuneful songs and blowing thoughtfully over them.
I thought it was a great opportunity to hear the band to me. That was David Vareas, who is the newest member of the group. Craig Taborn also plays piano, Eric Harland on drums, and Larry Grenadier on bass.
Let's go on a little bit of a detour. Here's a recording from a band called Black Host. This tune is called Hover, and their record is called Life in the Sugar Candle Mines. Hover from a band called Black Host. Black Host is hosted or led by a drummer named Gerald Cleaver. The band on this recording is it's filled with a lot of folks who have been sort of making noise in the more experimental improvisation community. Brandon Seabrook, the guitarist and banjo player, plays guitar here. Darius Jones on saxophone. Cooper Moore plays the piano here, and Pascal Niggenkemper on the bass. What you get out of this is sort of recording that sort of transcends genre, but it's also strangely and like severely melodic, right?
Patrick Jaron Watanonan joins us on The Checkout. We're talking about the best jazz recordings of 2013. And Patrick, as a producer at NPR Music, you yourself helped to coordinate the overall critical list for jazz in 2013 with Francis Davis. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Francis Davis, for the past 8 years or so, has been creating a poll. It started with 30 critics, largely based in New York, and now it's 137 critics, but also bloggers, journalists, radio producers, all sorts of folks who have weighed in on their favorite recordings of the year. And Wayne Shorter, to nobody's surprise, ended up as the number one album of the year, his album Without a Net. But there were a lot of other really interesting things that came out of just reading everybody's individual ballots. We also got people who really liked two different albums by, say, the pianist Mark Carey.
In fact, Patrick, I'm glad you brought up Mark Carey, because that's how we're going to end this segment. When I'm Called Home, it's from his recording For the Love of Abby. Patrick Jaran-Watanonon from NPR Music, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Josh.
When I'm Called Home, pianist Mark Carey pays tribute to his mentor, the singer and poet Abby Lincoln, from Carey's recording For the Love of Abby on Motema Music. Check out the 2013 NPR Music Jazz Critics Poll, edited by Francis Davis, online at NPR Music. Just so you know, The Checkout archives all of its programs on our website at checkoutjazz.org. Subscribe to the award-winning podcast on iTunes, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at Checkout Jazz. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. Our producer is Simon Rittner, also on Twitter at Simon Rittner. I'm Josh Jackson. Thanks for listening.